Hello and welcome back to the Villa Filler podcast. I'm here, as always, with my good friend Dan Wiseman. Dan, Manchester City 4, Aston Villa 1. I've actually just made myself sad saying the score again. I thought I was fine. I thought I was over it. I'm not. It is the evening after the night before. We're currently, Sheffield United versus, Liverpool versus Sheffield United and Chelsea versus Man U today, right? So, plenty of Premier League action on the go. But why would you be watching that when you could be listening to the Villa Filler podcast? That is all I will say. Dan, was Spurs the last time we got on the pod together? Spurs debrief?
Oh,
that was
God.
Just before the international break.
Mm.
I was off gallivanting away. You've also been away. We've both had plans, which is fine, and we should do that more often. But it's nice to podcast, mate. It's nice to talk things through. And let's talk about last night, mate, because I think, and maybe I don't know if I'm contradicting myself here, right? I'm fairly sure I've always maintained this. The narrative before the game from a lot of Villa fans, and I'm not calling out anyone in particular, but the sort of the feeling going into the game with all the 7 injuries / suspensions that we had, leaving out big players. Then got the last minute omission to Martinez, all of that. The feel, you know, I very much got the vibe that it was a free hit. And I don't like that. And, you know, you go 1-0 down straight away. Rodri, very well worked goal. And maybe for a second I thought maybe this was a free hit. But then we go and get back into the game not too long after, you know, through John Duran, which we'll get onto. But I don't really like how we sort of accepted defeat straight away, because there is a universe here, and you know, any Manchester City fans who are listening, listen, no delusion here from either of us at all, but there's a world here where we actually potentially get a draw from this game if we're being objective. And I didn't really like that sort of angle going into the game of, oh, it's a free hit, because I want us to win every game. We've not won at the Etihad since, what was it, 2007, I want to say off the top of my head. I think Sean Maloney scored in the last win at the Etihad, which should tell you everything you need to know about how long ago it was, mate. What were your thoughts heading into the game? Obviously, home game really for you, mate, being based in Manchester. Yeah. Great for you to be there.
Yeah.
It's always nice when there's a game just right on our doorsteps.
Absolutely. I'm just waiting for that Bolton cup tie again. Yeah. Good to be back, mate. Good to be back. It was good to be back at a game as well. I don't get to as many games as I'd like to, and so it was great to be there, although the result not befitting the occasion. Going into the game, I actually knew Man City's absentees before I knew ours, and so I think there were a couple of FPL accounts before the game that got a hold of the facts that Erling Haaland and Kevin De Bruyne wouldn't be starting for Manchester City. And even though obviously I was well aware of who we wouldn't have available to us, I felt cautiously optimistic,
yeah,
shall we say. I think Man City, although they have been very much in the title hunt, they haven't been the Manchester City of old. They certainly weren't the Manchester City of old against Arsenal at the weekend, which I'm sure many of us watching spent 90 arduous minutes dragging ourselves through as part of the weekend's entertainment, if you can call it that. And all of this kind of felt that, especially given the result that we had against them earlier on in the season, that we could go and get something. And then our lineup came out, and it's no disrespect to the lads that were out there, but there's a really interesting tweet actually from Martin Lawrence. I'm not going to take any credit for it, who put together an 11 of Villa players that weren't available or weren't starting against City, and it reads something like this. Martinez in goal, Cash, Torres, Mings and Moreno across the back line, Bailey, Kamara, Tielemans and McGinn across the midfield, with Jacob Ramsey in behind Ollie Watkins. And it is no disrespect to the team that we put out last night to say that I think that 11 is better.
Yeah,
I think that I would rather have that 11. Feels almost like the full strength Villa that was putting us in the title race in the run up to Christmas. And so I think when you consider that and the kind of the strength that Manchester City have, and then, as you rightly say, when 7 minutes in, Rodri runs onto that cutback and puts it past Robin Olsen, who, shout out to Robin Olsen,
by the way.
You know, if we're going to talk about the pre-match narrative, a lot of it was around him and the fact that he was coming in. And I thought he was fantastic. I really did. I think he put in a performance that Emi Martinez would have been proud of last night. I don't think one of the goals can be attributed to him. Without him, it would have been many more. He made some fantastic saves, particularly that one-on with Alvarez. And so I just wanted to give him his flowers briefly. But I think it's frustrating because kind of throughout the game, and this is perhaps I'll throw it back to you to talk about the first goal, mate, but it felt like, and obviously I live here in Manchester, as you rightly say, I have a lot of Manchester City fans in the office with me. And I said to a lot of them today, I was like, the transition and the counter-attack opened up a lot for Villa. And if we had an 11 on the pitch who had more minutes on the pitch together, that were more well acquainted, then I think we would have made better of those. But for 90 minutes, our game plan was basically, let's see how far Moussa Diaby can run with the football. And against Manchester City's back line, and particularly Josko Vardiol, that's not going to fly.
Nah, but a Bundesliga on Bundesliga action there. I think I look at the 11, and I'm in total agreement with you, mate. It's definitely not the strongest team. It's definitely not the ideal side that you would want to field against most teams in the league, right? But I look at one, Diego. I look at Clem Doug, love Longley. I look at Nicolo. I look at Morgan. I look at John Duran. Even Tim, right? There's height in this team. There's a bit more grit. And, you know, usually you would you'd probably kind of say that word with John McGinn. But this was a completely different tactical outlook on the game that I feel like we implemented, because, you know, we talk about it whenever we talk about Manchester City. We can't not talk about the tactical fouls. We can't not talk about Pep Guardiola and, you know, how dirty people like Bernardo Silva and Rico Lewis and even Phil Foden, guys like that, can be. And I sort of looked at the lineup and thought, I can see what you're cooking there, Unai. Let's make this a bit of a battle. And as silly as it probably sounds, I do think that we won our duels relatively well. It was just a lot of sort of second, third balls. We just weren't able to retain possession. And I lost count of the amount of times John Duran bounced Ruben Diaz, bounced Manuel Akanji. Same for Nicolo with Rodri, Jeremy Doku on his side as well. You know, tenacious players closing us down with real intent, real pace. And I think you have to give them credit for that. I think that clearly was the game plan. Let's try and match them physically, because nobody really seems to do that with Man City. I think there's this sort of like general fear that they're going to play you off the park and there's sort of no way you can stop it. Well, if you reduce the game to a little bit of one-on-one shoulder-to-shoulder action, which, if we're being completely honest, again, that's what Man City do all the time to win the ball back, then all of a sudden you've got a way more level playing field. And I say this, we still conceded 4 goals. But certainly during the first half, mate, I felt like we really took that fight to them. And it's individual mistakes where, again, you know, I've just referenced how glad I was that, you know, not glad, but, you know, I sort of acknowledged the midfield, right? That's what lets you down with the first goal. And again, to reference that Arsenal game that you mentioned that put us all to sleep on Super Sunday, is, you know, Pep Guardiola said in his post-match conference that they didn't have enough midfield runners. So, of course, it was going to be in the script that Rodri goes and gets on the end of a cross-in from Jeremy Doku, isn't it, mate? That was always going to happen.
Yeah, it's Rodri just loves scoring against us. As I said, he's got 5 goals against us in his career. Against no other opponent does he have more than 3. So we're clearly a favourite opponent for his. And, yeah, I mean, that was one of my main takeaways, to be honest with you, is just wow. I mean, what a football player. What a football player. He is One of those football players that I think goes under the radar so much, but like if you ever get the chance to go and watch Manchester City and you get in the stadium and you just kind of watch Rodri for 90 minutes, it's pretty insane the level that he's operating at. There's kind of been a few kind of conversations today about like, is he in the best player in the world conversation? There's no grounds to say why he shouldn't be. Yeah. He's poles apart of anybody else in that position. Like who the second best holding midfielder in the world is, I wouldn't even know where to begin. He is just streets ahead of kind of anyone that we've seen. And the fact that he's got this knack of scoring goals, but important goals as well, is just incredible. And so, yeah, I mean, when you can kind of concede to a player like him, occasionally you have to kind of tip your hat, I guess. It wasn't great defending. But yeah, I think we were, for a few of the goals, kind of architects of our own downfall. And we see that with the free kick at the end of the first half. I don't want to go into that too much, but obviously it's Zaniolo's fault. He kind of turns, it goes straight through him. And that's particularly frustrating because I do believe that if we'd have gone into the at half time 1-1, I really do think that would be a different game. And I don't want to sit here and pretend like they didn't have Kevin De Bruyne and Erling Haaland on the bench, and had the game been closer throughout the second half, they no doubt would have come on. And so that's kind of something that to consider, I guess. But, you know, even if we skip right to the end and the goal that seals Foden's hat-trick, we give the ball away so cheaply. We dispossess Phil Foden and then give it away literally about 2 seconds later. And he's able to pick the ball up again. And, like, you know, he slams it into the back of the next one, 25 yards. There's not much you can do about that. But you can do a lot about what we did 2 seconds prior. And so I think we did try and change that throughout the game. I think we tried to kind of play through them. And it quickly became evident, really, in the first half that wasn't going to work. We didn't have the manpower. We didn't have the capability to do that. And so we started to go long, and we went long a lot. And we got a decent amount of joy from it, really, trying to get John Duran to pin the centre halves and bring others into play, which I don't really think is his game, to be honest with you. But I thought he did it pretty well yesterday. I thought he had a really good game, and the goal is fantastically taken by him. But yeah, it's one where I think individual mistakes is the right way to kind of frame this. But again, like, if we are going to compare this game to the one on Super Sunday, there were none. Arsenal made no individual errors. They made no individual mistakes. And you just can't afford to do that against Manchester City. You really can't afford that to do that against any of the Premier League's top three. We've lost 19 of our last 20 games against the top three currently in the Premier League. And so those are the gaps that we've got to bridge. That's what's currently separating us from the sides above us. If kind of anybody is, it's those finer margins. I think I genuinely do believe that individual errors and the frequency of them is kind of what separates us now from, we can play just as good a football as anyone in this league. I don't think that's kind of to be contested, but we do make a lot of mistakes. We do make a lot of mistakes, and we're not great from set pieces. We know this. There's currently these small trivial details that honestly just make, over a season, can easily accumulate to 10 points easily. And so it's something to learn going forward. I don't want to be too harsh, because you know, we were undermanned, and you know, there were still some nice storylines to it. But yeah, I think there's definitely things that we can look at going forward. I maintain that 4-1 I think is a little bit harsh, and I think that a full strength Villa definitely makes more of the opportunities that we have on the counter attack. There's one in the second half that results in Luis having a shot at Ortega, which he puts over the bar, and you kind of think that, you know, with a more well-oiled, you know, Watkins, JJ, Diaby, Bailey, like whatever kind of quartet, trident you want to use, whatever you want to call it, with those guys on the pitch, maybe we'll make a little bit more of those. But you know, that's kind of hypothetical, I guess. But I think the biggest gripe for me is that we didn't get into halftime at 1-1, which I think would have been really interesting to see kind of how the game played out after that. Because I think as soon as we came out and conceded the third, everybody kind of knew that was it, really.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as well, like, being the sort of glass half full podcast that we are, you have to take the positives. You have to take the, you know, the huge goal for John Duran. Obviously, it's an assist for Morgan Rogers as well. Comes off a very good international break with the U21s. Again, aside from the wall, which is almost unforgivable from Nicolo, it felt like another really solid performance from him as well. Tim starting away at the Etihad, obviously that's massive as well. So there are positives to take out of this game. And one of them, obviously, mate, has to be the fact that Jack Grealish didn't get on the score sheet. I would have lost 10-0 as long as he didn't score. I could have slept absolutely fine last night. What do you think about that, mate? Because there's been a lot of outrage, and not just from Villa fans. There's been outrage sort of about the Villa fans towards the treatment that Jack Grealish has received. I believe this is only the third time since leaving he's actually played against us. It may be fourth, but it's his first start this season for Manchester City. First 90 minutes, sorry. And for me, like, the reception, it is what it is, right? Because I'm kind of over the Grealish thing now, but during the game, did I boo him? Absolutely, because that's what you do. You just, you know, like, you support your team. You don't support the other team. You do whatever you can to sort of put them off. It wasn't really that deep for me. And now I'm not speaking on behalf of the 3,000 travelling Villa fans, because I know for a fact that it was deeper for most, if not all of them, I think I would sort of fairly assume. And that's fair enough, right? I'm not digging anyone out. I just find it quite interesting, purely because of the reaction from other teams' fans that I'm seeing on social media. Because the way I see it, mate, is obviously, as I just said, I'm sort of over it by now, but people are more than inclined to dislike him for whatever. I think there are very valid reasons to not like Jack Grealish and to give him a hostile reception. And ultimately, like, what do you want us to do? Do you want us to clap him every time he's on the ball? Like, that's not what football was about. Come on. We want to win and we want to see the other people lose. Like, that's just how it is. Do you know what I mean? Did you boo? You didn't boo.
No, I didn't. Not necessarily because I don't agree with it. I actually am probably more like the Villa fans seem to be really divided. No, I think I fall more in your camp than towards the kind of pro Jack Grealish side. I don't care that he left.
It's happened.
How many times have we seen, like, it's one of them. But, like, the kind of whole, the one part of the narrative that I don't like is the whole, he saved this club, look what he did for FFP, like, he brought in 100 million for us. That's nothing to do with Jack.
No.
Jack has no say in that. Do you think if Man City had put £20 million on the table, he still wouldn't, like, he didn't accept that move because he was like, oh, I have the opportunity to save Villa here. He went and got that move because he wanted to play for Manchester City. So that's kind of one part of it that I do have a little bit of a gripe with. And secondly, there's the whole my club.
That's the nitty gritty of it. Yeah. People always ignore. You want to leave, that's fine. Don't lie. Don't gaslight us. Don't say things you don't mean. You want, like, if it said at the start of summer, I want to go, there would have been no ill will. We'd have been heartbroken, but there'd have been no ill will.
Do you think, like, I always compare it to, and I know it's slightly different. I know he wasn't an academy prospect, but I think in terms of where the clubs were at relevant periods, no Villa fan dislikes Christian Benteke, right? No Villa fan.
And he wanted to leave so bad.
Yeah, of course he did. Of course he did. And he went on to play for Liverpool, and Villa fans adore him because we accepted that the clubs where he went to a club that was at the time in a far better place. It was in Europe and Villa was struggling. They were in relegation. We get it. Christian Benteke didn't wear next season's shirt in a kit launch, give it my city, my club, and then leave. It's the way that you go about it. And I think the Villa fans have, I do have a right to feel aggrieved. Yeah, I do. And I think it doesn't help. And I'm not, this isn't me saying that he's wrong for doing this. He wants to score more against Aston Villa than any other club. You can see that in the way that he plays. What we know as a club more than anybody what a determined, hell-bent Jack Grealish looks like. And we saw it last night. He looked so determined every time he got on the ball. You can see that, obviously. He kind of dived at the Etihad a couple of seasons ago. This season, like in last night's game, he was trying to get Dougie Luiz sent off. He wants to beat Aston Villa so badly. And that's not just a Jack Grealish thing. That's a lot of players kind of feel that against their old club. They want to prove a point. They want to make, like, even, you know, if you want to go deeply psychological about this, to prove to themselves that they made the right decision, that they went to a club that's capable of beating the old one. It's human nature. I don't have a problem with that. But, like, let's not just pretend that it's one way. Jack Grealish wants to beat Aston Villa. Jack Grealish has dived to beat Aston Villa. Jack Grealish has tried to get players sent off the play for Aston Villa in those games. It's not just Villa fans that are sending abuse one way. And it's, obviously, Jack Grealish isn't abusing us, but it's a transactional thing. It goes both ways.
Absolutely. There we go. That's the meat and bones we wanted, mate. That's what we wanted. Tell us how you really feel. I like that. Exactly, man. That's the thing. Like, I can't stand all this revisionism, and I feel quite strongly about not feeling strongly about Jack Grealish. And I know that sounds ridiculous.
Yep.
I'm over it now.
I totally get it.
I was pissed, but now I'm over it. So, but it's the same. Like, Bruno Fernandes comes, the whole of Villa Park calls him a rat and screams and boos and does all that. It's never a problem then, is it? Do you know what I mean? So, you know, the abuse, all that, whether it's right or wrong, it's part of the game. It's part of the culture. And we should probably leave that there. I want to give a shout out to Callum Chambers as well. Only man who actually fucking nailed Grealish as well. The only one who really gave it to him. Ezri didn't want it. Ezri didn't want to hurt his boy. Ezri had many opportunities where he could have, you know, got plans to build a statue cemented before full time if he'd have nailed him. But shout out to Cal for doing that. And I mean, as well, you know, Amari Kellyman comes on, first Premier League appearance for him. Nice little storyline there. I think overall, again, it's not, I hate the free hit narrative, but it's a game that we've now sort of got out of the way. It's a tough game as well. It kind of changes the complexion of not only our season, but, you know, the games that we've got against Arsenal, which is very soon at their place, and also Liverpool when the time comes to play them at home as well. Obviously, it puts, I guess it does put pressure on both of them, really, because we've offered them a lifeline, and you know, we've got a very difficult run of fixtures. And as well, I look at the team, and I think people before the game would have gone, why aren't you playing Tielemans? Why aren't you playing Bailey? Why aren't you playing so-and-so? We played on Saturday against Wolves. Great win, as we discussed. You then play on Wednesday away to Manchester City. You're then at home on Saturday. And Thursday, again, you're at home. You're on the road on the Sunday to play Arsenal away. After that, you travel away on the following Thursday to Lille, and then on the Saturday again at 3 o'clock, you've got Bournemouth. That you've got five games there within just over 2 weeks, and with just the state that the squad is in right now, and hopefully Emmy just had the shits yesterday and is fine for the weekend and all of that. And obviously John McGinn will return now. He's served his suspension. All of a sudden, the Brentford game, even the Lille game at home, things start to look a little bit better, mate, don't they?
Yeah, and I think it starts this weekend, mate. I think it starts this weekend. You know, we have... Let's just wind back a couple of weeks to... You know what's interesting? Can I just mention this, actually? There's a stat going around that's really gone under the radar, I think, and this actually massively changed how I felt the game. And it involves us. So it was actually coincidentally, as you said at the top of the pod, mate, the last time we recorded Spurs' big win at Villa Park. Do you know that's the last time a Premier League team won an away game in the league?
Is it?
How crazy is that?
Jeez. Well, that could have changed by the time this is up.
Yes, yes. So potentially, like, depending on when you're...
But yeah.
Definitely, it was the case.
Wow.
Yesterday and going into today, I'm just going to check kind of the fixtures that are currently live at the moment. So yeah, if Man United go and beat Chelsea, you may be listening to this after they have. If they haven't, then it will remain the case probably until 12:30 on Saturday when Crystal Palace are at home to Manchester City. But yeah, March 10th, Spurs' win at Villa Park was the last time an away team won a Premier League game. Pretty crazy. And so, yes, maybe that is a nice segue into this weekend's game because, Brentford aren't a side that travel well. Either they've lost 9 of their last 10 games in the league on the road. And so, Yeah, there's a bit of an onus on Emery here because it was that Spurs game, yeah, you know, that kind of followed the Ajax game, and we kind of took one lightly to follow on the other. And I'm not saying that we took City lightly or that any of the changes weren't enforced, but there were kind of names on the bench that in an ideal world maybe would have started, maybe Bailey, maybe Tielemans. And so if it is a case where we've had one eye on this weekend's game, it kind of puts that added weight on it and that pressure to make sure we do go and get 3 points. Because if we have kind of, as you say, I don't want to use that term, neither do you, but say if we kind of saw this week as a free hit, which I don't really think we did, but it can only really fuel that narrative if we don't go and get the win here, mate.
Yeah, you're right. And I cannot believe how atrocious Brentford's form has been. One win in the last 10. That's a genuine reaction. I've just pulled up their sofa score page. I didn't realise they were struggling that hard. And obviously, you know, there's draws in there as well. There's three draws, you know, two of which were the most recent games against Manchester United and against Brighton, which obviously happened yesterday as well. This feels like a must-win game. You're at home. And wow, I mean, things are supposed to get better for Brentford. I mean, I'll be completely honest, I didn't see the Brighton game, did catch the Manchester United game, however. And if we are being honest, they did completely dominate Manchester United. And it was only, it was a crazy end to that game, wasn't it, mate? With the whole, you know, I think they've stole it. Brentford get the sort of 109th minute winner or whatever, equaliser, sorry, whatever it was. It's going to be a tough game. Oh my God, they had 31 shots in that game. Jesus Christ, yeah. I do remember watching it. It was a crazy game. However, when a side has only won one in their last 10, no excuses, mate. You have to go and get the win.
You're not wrong, mate. You're not wrong. And there's a lot of stats. There's a lot of numbers that say that we've got a good chance of doing so. So obviously, I mentioned their away form's not great. Their form in general isn't great. They've never won away at Villa Park in the league. So, you know, we'd be kind of treading into uncharted waters should we lose. We've got a good record against them, but I think particularly the away game against them earlier this season, one of the bigger wins that we've had,
yeah,
the kind of late nature of it all, the kind of the significance of Ollie scoring in a game where he got a lot of grief from the away fans, which is probably also something kind of to reference in relation to the Grealish argument that it's not just Villa fans.
Absolutely
get a bit gripey with former players. But yeah, I think it's an interesting game. And it's not to say that I think this will be a particularly easy one, but you know, you kind of do. We do have a tough run of games, as you say, mate. And the games are going to come thick and fast. Obviously, Arsenal is our next league game. Southampton against two Europa Conference League quarterfinal games against Lille. And then, I mean, you've only got 5 games into the end of the season. And so this game is probably, you know, our most nailed on chance of getting 3 points until, well, you've got Bournemouth at home on the 21st of April. And then after that, Palace on the last day of the season. Like, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. You know, you've got Chelsea, Brighton, Liverpool kind of still to play around that, as well as potentially a semi-final. Who knows? So, yeah, I mean, it's crazy how quickly the end of the season has come around. It's really important that we do start picking up points. Spurs are hot on our heels. They're just 2 points behind us with a game in hand. That game in hand is Chelsea away, I believe, which is important to mention, I think. Spurs have got Nottingham Forest at home. That's the late game, the 6 o'clock on Sunday. So they'll also be hope 3 points from that game. You probably lean towards them getting it out of that game. So yeah, to ensure we hold on to fourth spot, stave off that threat from Spurs for kind of at least another week. They then have a really tough run of games. So Spurs go after this game against Forest. They've got Newcastle away, City at home, Arsenal at home, Liverpool away. So, wow, that's a real marathon for them. But they have the benefit of not having European football. So, something to consider.
Absolutely. It's going to be a really chaotic run. And when you look at Brentford as well, you know, the strengths are they're incredible from set pieces. And, you know, that is generally something that we do struggle with a little bit as well, mate. Something that we do struggle to do. We tend to concede from corners, from free kicks. And, you know, when you've got someone like Tony, who not only is just a fantastic goal scorer when he's on his day, but he's also a dead ball specialist as well. It's less than ideal. It is less than ideal. However, I'm going to go bold and I'm going to predict a big win for the Villa. I'm going to go with a 4-0 win. And I don't know where this confidence has come from. I really don't.
I'm here for it.
But I think I'm going to do it, mate.
Well, that was the kind of the big negative going away from last night, was when you talk about how close to the league it is. Our goal difference took a significant hit yesterday.
Right.
And we need to go away to put in that right. So currently on goal difference, we're behind that 4-1 defeat took us behind Spurs, who obviously also have a game in hand to play. So it's important we do go about setting that right. I do think we'll win. I'm going to halve your scoreline, mate, and I'm going to go 2-0 to the Villa.
I'd take it, mate. I would absolutely take it. Guys, let us know your score predictions in the comment section down below. As always, we'd love to know your thoughts on the Man City game and what you thought about Jack Grealish as well. I think there's, you know, a nuanced discussion to be had, as I think we had a nuanced discussion. But let us know your thoughts in the comment section down below. If you're listening on Apple and Spotify, make sure you follow, download, share with a friend. And if you're on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, and up the Villa.